Good morning, everyone. I'm Mitchell McLaren. Today I'll be presenting some work which I did earlier this year at QUT back in Brisbane, Australia. I've now relocated to the Netherlands in case anyone's wondering. I'm presenting on behalf of the co-authors as well, Robbie Vogt, Brendan Baker and Sridhar Sridharan. The work today is basically an experimental study on how SVMs perform when you decrease the amount of speech that is available to them for speaker verification. So a brief outline, I'll give the motivation, why we did this study, and then we'll do some experiments looking at how each of the components of the standard GMM SVM system, how it responds to the reduction of speech being available to it. This includes the background data set, session compensation, particularly in app. We look at a bit of an analysis of the variation in the kernel space with short utterances, and of course score normalization data sets. Then I'll present some conclusions. So motivation, it's quite well known that as you reduce the amount of speech available to a system, we're going to have a reduction in performance. Now there have been some previous studies which generally focus on the GMM-UBM approach and even more recently with the joint factor analysis. But nothing has really targeted the SVM case, and this is why we're doing this work here. One of the things to mention here is QUT participated in EvalITA, which is almost a miniature NIST evaluation, I guess you'd say, in 2009. And some of the observations we got from this evaluation was that the SVMs outperformed our JFA system when we had ample amount of speech, so 6 minutes, whereas the opposite was true for the 20-second condition, so the JFA performed better. So there was a distinct difference between the generative and discriminative approaches that was dependent on the duration of the speech that was coming in. Another observation here was also that JFA was more effective when estimating the session and speaker subspaces on duration of speech that was similar to the evaluation conditions. So we're going to look at that a bit today with SVMs. Of course, SVMs are quite widespread in the speaker verification community. We just had to look at the presentations last week, NIST 2010, where almost all submissions had the GMM SVM configuration in there somehow. So we're looking now at how intuitive is it to select development data when we have mismatched training and trial segment durations in the SVM configuration. So the main questions here for the SVM systems are, to what degree does limited speech affect the SVM base classification? And also, which system components are the most sensitive to speech quantity? So we're presenting these results with the hope of finding direction in which to aim to counteract their effects, I suppose you would say. Most of you know about the GMM SVM system, I would suppose. Where we're using stacked GMM component means as features for the SVM classification. We know we can get good performance when you have plenty of speech available. And in this work, we're looking at the importance of matching our development data sets to the evaluation conditions for each of the individual components. So let's take a look at the flow diagram of the system. And basically, we have three main data sets that go into development. First of all, we want to train a transform matrix for session compensation, particularly NAP. So we have a transform training data set. We also have a background data set that provides negative information during SVM training. And lastly, we have score normalization data sets if you choose to apply score normalization. So the approach for this study is that we're going to go from a baseline SVM system. That's one without score normalization and no session compensation, and build onto that progressively, looking at how each of the additional components are affected by the duration of speech. So these three sets, as I mentioned, were the background data set, training data set for session compensation, and lastly, score normalization. So I'll give you a quick look at the system we're working with here. It's the GMM SVM system, 512 component UVMs, 12 dimension MFCCs with appended deltas. Imposter data was taken only from SREO4, and we used this data for both the background data set and ZT score normalization. With NAP, we use 40 dimensions of greatest variation, and they're learned from SRE04 and Switchboard 2. The evaluations we're performing here are from the NIST 2008 corpora, particularly the short 2 and short 3 condition. Now, this usually has 2.5 minutes of conversational speech per utterance. And the way we're looking at reduced duration is in two focus conditions, full short condition and short short condition. Now, in the full short condition, we leave the training segment as is, full length, and we progressively truncate the test utterance to the desired duration. In the short short case, we truncate both train and test to the same duration, so it's essentially matched duration in these evaluations. So let's look at the baseline SVM performance, and in particular we're going to go back to what we observed in EvalEter and see how it performs compared to the GMM system, just to give us a point of reference of what we're looking at here. So here we're using baseline and what we're terming state of the art, which is now not so true with the iVector approach coming out. We're looking at the baseline and state-of-the-art for both GMM and SVM systems. For systems that were developed using the full 2.5 minutes of speech in training and testing. So we're not explicitly dealing with the lower durations of speech here. The first thing we notice here, the solid lines, are the baseline approaches. We see that the baseline SVM approach gives us better performance than the GMM baseline. Just as a note, the GMM baseline here has no session compensation and no score normalisation, which might be why this is being observed here. But as we reduce the duration of speech, the SVM quickly deteriorates in performance compared to the GMM system. It's not quite noticeable in the state-of-the-art system, but the GMM is in front of the SVM the whole way there. Now, if we look at the short-short conditions, so this is where both train and test are being reduced, we actually see that the SVM baseline system outperforms the so-called state-of-the-art once we reduce below the 80 seconds. So having that, the development of the system on the full 2.5 minutes of speech here might be the reason for this, but we're about to look into that. In the case of the GMM system, however, it's less than 10 seconds that we're seeing the baseline jump in front of the better system there. So there are some significant differences and issues we need to look into here, and hopefully the development data sets that we look into here will help us out with that. So let's start with the background data set. And here we're going to look at the SVM system and how changing the speech duration in the background data set affects performance without score normalisation and without session compensation. So as we know, the background data set gives us the negative information in SVM training. We generally have many more negative examples than client examples in the NIST SREs. And we've previously shown that the choice of this data set greatly affects model quality. So the real question that comes up with the SVMs here is how should we select this data set in mismatched train test durations? So should we be matching the duration to the train utterance, the test utterance, or the shorter of the two utterances? So I've got a series of three slides here to present. Firstly, we've got the short-short condition, so that's matched training and testing duration, and it's quite obvious that it's better to match the background to the evaluation conditions here. In the full short, so that's full training, short testing, we're actually seeing that it's better to match the background data set to the test utterance, the shorter test utterance. And in the last condition, which we've introduced here, is short full. So short testing, training, full testing. And again, we don't see quite as large a discrepancy in the shorter durations, but we're actually seeing that matching to the shorter training utterance gives us a little bit of an improvement towards the lower durations here. So what conclusions can we draw from this? Well, let's look at the equal error rate as well on this plot here to give us a bit more of a full overview, and we're particularly focusing on the 10-second condition here. First thing we can see here is that matching the background data set to the training segment does not always maximise performance. However, if we match to the test segment, in our results, we're always getting the best DCF performance. And in contrast, if we want the best equal error performance, we match to the shortest duration. So there's a bit of a choice that can be made there, depending on what you want your system to do, what operating point you want to aim for. So in the following experiments, we've chosen to use the shorter test utterance as the duration that we're matching our background data set to. So let's look now at session compensation. Nuisance attribute projection removes from the kernel space the directions of greatest session variation, and there's a small formula up the end showing that the dimensions captured in the U transform matrix are projected out of the kernel space. Of course, the transform U has to be learned from a training data set. Now, what should we be using in this transform training data set when we've got limited test speech? Or what if both train and test speech are limited? So on this first slide, we're looking at the full short condition. Our system here has no score normalization, but the background has been matched to the shorter test utterance in each of these cases. And it's quite clear that using matched NAP training in this case, so that's matching to the shorter test utterance, gives us the best performance. And in fact, if we use full NAP training, the reference system, that's one without NAP, jumps in front in the lower durations. So here we really want to match to the NAP, to the shorter test duration in the NAP transform. And in the paper we've stated the most challenging trial segment, so the shorter test one. Now let's look at the short case. This is an interesting case because we actually observe that even though we match the NAP training data set to the 10-second duration, we're still finding the best performance comes from our baseline system, so one without NAP. So why is this? We're finding the full NAP training, of course, degrades performance quite significantly, but matched NAP just isn't jumping in front of the baseline. So there must be a point somewhere that NAP fails to provide benefits in the limited training and testing case. So at what point is that? Well, here's a plot where we've matched the NAP training based on the duration in the short. Remember, this is a short condition, whereas the full short, we actually got a bit more benefit out of NAP. We actually see that just below the 40-second mark in our system is where the reference system jumps in front of a compensated system. So then, why is this happening? Let's look at the variability in the kernel space. So we found that NAP wasn't quite robust to limited training and testing speech. In the context of JFA systems, the session subspace variation was found to increase as the length of training and testing utterances was reduced. So we're going to see if that's the same case in the SVM kernel. So on this slide we have a table with a number of durations for the short trial condition. And we've also got up top a reference, a map relevance factor of 8, and we're presenting the total variability in the speaker space and session space of the SVM kernel. And we actually see that in contrast to what was observed with JFA, we're getting a reduction in both of these spaces as the duration is decreased. Now we're wondering, why is this the case? What is the difference here? And so what we did was actually take an inconsequential tau, close to zero, so that our super vectors have more room to move. And we actually find that we do in fact agree with the JFA observations and that we are getting more a greater magnitude of variability in each of these spaces if we change our relevance factor to close to zero. So here we can say that the map adaptation relevance factor has a significant influence on the observable variation in the SVM kernel space. That's just something to be aware of. Now what's interesting though, irrespective of the tau that we use, we're getting very similar session to speaker ratio. So here the session variation that's coming out is far more dominant as the duration is reduced. And of course this is why speaker verification is more difficult with shorter speech segments. So why then, if we're getting more session variation, why is NAP struggling to estimate it as we reduce the duration? So let's look at this plot here. We have the session variability, the magnitude of session variability and speaker variability in the top 100 eigenvectors estimated by NAP for a duration of 80 seconds and 10 seconds. Now the solid lines are 80 seconds, dashed ones are 10 seconds, and session variability is the black line. First thing we notice here is that when we have longer duration of speech, the slope for the session variation is greater. So we're getting more session variation that can be represented in a lower dimension. Whereas as the duration reduces, we're flattening out. We're becoming a bit more isotropic in our session variation. In contrast, our speaker variation slope is actually quite similar here. So this aligns with the table we just saw, where the session variation is becoming far more dominant here. Now, NAP was developed on the assumption that the majority of session variation lies in a low-dimensional space. So it's our understanding now that because of the more isotropic session variation that's coming about from these reduced utterances, that the assumption no longer holds, and this is why it's unable to benefit in the short conditions. So how do we overcome this problem? We're still working on that. Next, we'll move on to score normalization. Be a quite quick part because everyone knows what score normalization is here, I think, after the last few presentations. Basically, it counteracts statistical variation in classification scores, and it attempts to scale the scores from a given trial to a global distribution using either Z-norm or T-norm, which are client and test-centric approaches, respectively. And again, we're using an imposter cohort, something we need to select out well. Now, typically, score normalization cohorts should match the evaluation conditions. In the context of SVNs, we want to know how important is it to match these conditions and how much does score normalization actually benefit us when we have limited speech. In this table here, we've got the full short condition on the second row and the short condition down the bottom there, looking at the 10-second condition in particular. We have three different cohort selection methods here. None, which are the raw scores, unnormalized. Full, which means both our Z and T norm cohorts are using 2.5 minutes of speech. And then matched. So in the case of the full 10-second condition here, matched simply means the Z norm utterances are truncated to the 10 seconds. Whereas in the 10-second case, both Z and T norm are truncated. Now, it's quite obvious that the full cohorts are going to give us worse performance, which we can see here, and that matched norm cohorts offer the best performance. It's quite elementary, but the interesting observation here is that the relative performance gain from applying score normalization seems quite minimal. So the question is, at what point are we willing to go about choosing out our score normalization sets to try and help performance? So to try and help answer that question, we looked at the relative gain in MinDCF that score normalization provides as we reduce the duration of speech. And we see that with the full 80 seconds, we're getting over 10% gain, which is quite reasonable. It's in the lower durations of speech, 5 and 10 seconds, we've got less than 2% relative gain. Are these really worth the effort of trying to choose out a good normalization set and the risk that our normalization sets are not actually going to be chosen well and reduce performance? So it's another question thrown out there. So in conclusion, we've investigated the sensitivity of the popular SVM system to reduce training and testing segments. And we found the best performance came from selecting a background that matched the shortest or test duration, depending on whether you want to optimise the DCF or equal error rate. That NAP transforms trained on data matching the shortest duration gave us the best performance, and score normalisation cohorts matched to the conditions were also the best. We highlighted an issue with NAP when dealing with the limited speech, and this was due to session variability becoming more isotropic as speech duration was reduced. And score normalization provided quite a few improvements in the limited speech condition. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for this systematic investigation into the effects of the duration. As far as I can see, Patrick's presentation this morning, which I'm not sure which if you were here then.
No, in fact, I had to sleep in because I had a bad case of food poisoning the other day.
I think Patrick's observations this morning give a nice explanation of what you're seeing. So the short explanation is if you're using relevance map, mm-hmm. then you're introducing speaker-dependent within-speaker variability.
Okay.
That's what Patrick called the directional scattering. Mm. So do you agree with me? That explains what they're seeing.
I'll have to talk with you after. I'm sorry I missed your presentation this morning.
So, any other questions?
I have a question. You're learning your U matrix for the NAP as doing relevance map and then doing PCA on that information.
Sorry, you're saying it's not quite loud enough here.
Sorry, my question is regarding how you're learning the U matrix to project away. So you're doing relevance map, and then on that you're computing a PCA?
Computing a PCA?
PCA on your center relevant map vectors, or?
I know that to estimate the U-matrix, we are doing some kind of PCA to go to a lower space for computational reasons, but then we go back to the original space afterwards. Yep. I don't know if that's...
So my question is... the key that I've seen when you learn that U matrix is that if you're just doing a regular PCA, which is a computer lower dimensional approximation of your, if you put all your data as vectors and then you do a low rank approximation of that matrix, that's basically what PCA is doing. You're not taking into account the counts that when you do joint factor analysis, you're using the counts and how to weight the importance of information in different parts of the vector. So my question is mostly regarding to, are you somehow incorporating the information that when you have a lot of Gaussians and very few points, not all the Gaussians get assigned points, and then when you train your subspace does not know that. So maybe that accounts for a lot of these observations that you have there.
I understand your point, actually. I think I do. I don't believe we're actually explicitly taking into account the fact that some Gaussians might miss out on observations. And yeah, I think I can understand what you're saying, that this might have an effect on the performance of the U matrix.
I'm. Can you hear me? Yeah. I'm a little concerned about the. I'm all for empirical studies because you want to see what works best, but you also want to understand why it works best. So what you said, sort of from an intuitive standpoint, was you're doing this process of map to get Gaussians, and then you're comparing the means of some training Gaussians that you got with MAP with some test Gaussians that you got with MAP and using SVM, and if it's not the same amount of data, things go wrong, basically. And so the solution you're applying is you're saying, well, make it the same length. Mm-hmm. It would seem like you can, but you did that study without normalization. Okay, so of course when they're not, you'd expect all kinds of normalization is there, as you said, to deal with differences like this and other differences. I'm wondering whether by doing it without normalization that we're sort of like making the worst possible condition that would then be fixed by this, but your solution ended up being to discard data. So so the first question, I guess, is when you truncated the training samples, did you literally just discard the rest of the data, or did you create additional short training utterances out of those?
No, we discarded the data.
Okay. So one obvious thing is if you take a 30-second utterance and truncate it to 10 seconds, it would be wasteful not to use the other 20 seconds as two more 10-second chunks. But besides that observation, I'm worried about if you had used normalization, it might have fixed the problem to begin with.
We did actually run these also with score normalization, but we found basically similar observations, but we wanted to try and get back to a very basic system just to help, I guess you would say, the reader's understanding and flow of the paper.
Right. I'm hearing in many papers, especially today, a strong desire on everyone's part to find a way to do things without normalization, as if somehow normalization were a bad thing, when it seems to me that normalization is almost beyond the obvious thing that you have to model the speech. It seems like the only other thing, in a very high-level sense, is normalization. After all, we're doing some kind of hypothesis test and verification, and that inherently requires knowing how to set a threshold, which requires some kind of normalization. And if, to the extent that we try to get away from that, we're tying our hands behind our backs. I mean, it's good to look for methods that are inherently better, but I guess I would say, you know, you should still do normalization. It can never hurt.
Okay.
If done properly. My claim was, while it's good to look for better models, I don't understand the desire to do away with normalization, because it seems like normalization is at the crux of the problem and will ultimately fix whatever else you did wrong, and it can never hurt.
Yes, normalization does exactly that. So what we're unhappy with is that we did do something wrong, so we're trying to do that stage better. And if in the end we find it's still not perfect, then I'm sure we will keep on normalizing. So the other way to look at it is that normalization is just another modeling step. The extracting the MFCC features is modeling the acoustic signal, and then GMMs is modeling the MFCCs, and I vectors again is modeling the GMM supervectors, and then in the end there's a score modeling stage. So at the end you're just stacking more and more stages, and it might be nice just to reduce the number of stages, but Probably, we might just go on normalizing forever. Can we have the next speaker, please?